Thank you for joining us on this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. It is the 2nd of March, and I am broadcasting today and every Tuesday out of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And you can listen to today's show and all previous shows on www.heritageradionetwork.com. And so I begin today's show with the latest news. The string of natural disasters has continued, this time with an 8.8 magnitude earthquake devastating Chile, contributing to the loss of hundreds of lives, many homes, and serious damage to the wine region of Colchagua and Maule and Curicó. This was the largest quake in 50 years. Millions of liters of fermenting juice have been lost. Many tanks have collapsed inside wineries. And the harshest was stated to get underway. But between travel delays, damaged facilities, and disrupted electrical power, wineries will be hard-pressed to process grapes normally during the 2010 harvest, which is just about to get underway. And the unfortunate news continues with latest information on the death of Alois Kracher, renowned Austrian sweet wine vintner who has passed from cancer. His botryticized wines gained international fame in the 1990s, and he had continued working after his son, who had continued the family legacy, producing some of the world's most heralded sweet wines, untimely passed away in 2007. Gerhard Kracher, the grandson of Alois Sr., will run the winery together with his mother, Michaela. So our condolences to both the Crocker family and all the families in Chile and the wineries who are dealing with such distress. The market feed, WineSpectrData.com has published interviews with Scott Osborne of Fox Run Vineyards of the Finger Lakes and Charles Massoud of Long Island's Pomonok Vineyards, each whom of opposing views as to New York Governor David Patterson's proposal to sell wine in supermarkets. Osborne supports Patterson's initiative to allow the sale of wine in grocery stores, claiming that New York wine sales have been stagnant because there has not been enough opportunity for expansion within the state. The addition of wine in grocery stores will add another 19,000 outlets to potentially sell wine. Massoud's position is that the proposal is an attempt to raise government funds at the expense of small business owners, particularly the small wine store owners, who will have a hard time competing against the larger grocery stores who have a monopoly and can drive wine prices down. For now, you can read more about this developing and interesting debate on winespectator.com. We're going to take a short break before my guest this afternoon from Farmstead Wines joins us on the phone from Vancouver. We'll be right back.
Burn for a bad easy and broadcast so raw and deep.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network and today's show of At the Root of It. A thank you to our sponsor, Edwards in Surrey, Virginia, specializing in smoked hams and meats. And a welcome to my guest this afternoon, Anthony Niccolo from Vancouver. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Aaron?
Very well, thanks. I've only been able to speak to people who have been in Vancouver recently for the Olympics, but not an actual resident. So how was it? How did your city fare?
I thought we showed pretty well.
Yeah.
I haven't been living here that long. I've spent most of my life living in Chicago, but Vancouver was the weather was fantastic, and I think people got a feeling for not only the fact that it's a welcoming city, but that it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I've never been, but I've only heard that, and seeing the pictures this time around over the Olympics sparked further interest.
Well, you should come visit.
Yeah, what brought you out there?
My wife's family is originally from Vancouver.
Okay. And how I know that you, being a chef, I'm sure are enjoying the produce and the fish and from the local waters there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Really great ingredients to cook with. And, you know, it doesn't really get as cold in the winter as it does, say, in the Midwest or even in New York. And so, you know, the complaints about what's available here in March aren't as bad as they used to be in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I wanted to definitely wrap up the week in wine because there's so much to speak about with you today. And I know you have a couple different businesses, which I wanted to touch upon. But first, start with Farmstead Wines. And if you could tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Farmstead Wines is a wine importer and distributor in North America.
Mm-hmm.
We work with small sustainable farms where it's always the same person growing the grapes and making the wine. And they are wines that I think of as an agricultural product. So they are farmed naturally, but then that process of trying to raise really healthy plants and produce great fruit extends into the cellar, that once they get into the cellar, they're just trying to preserve it. So basically started because the way I thought of food as a chef and still do is that you buy great ingredients and then don't mess them up. And that almost always means knowing the people and process responsible for growing, raising, or producing it.
Sure.
And I was in Italy and helped with a chef buddy of mine, and we were helping a farmer butcher a pig, and tasted some of his wine and realized that he had that exact same philosophy about wine, and he took it a step further by growing the ingredients, the grapes himself. But then his goal in the cellar was just to preserve it.
To make the grapes speak as naturally as possible in their in the bottle, the quality of the grapes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so interesting because we are so obsessed in this country, or so preoccupied with what we put in our bodies when it comes to food, but so often we don't think about the wine or the spirits and the traceability of that.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that we probably don't do it enough for food either.
Yeah, true.
You know,
it's a growing awareness, though.
There was a hockey game on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So we were watching the game and making some burgers, and I knew exactly where the beef that I had made the burgers from came from and what their practices were. And my brother-in-law was concerned that there might not be enough burgers for the amount of people coming over, and so he went to the market and grabbed some more. And I cooked both batches, and then when we were serving them, there were two plates. And one of the guests said, well, what's the difference between the two?
Right.
And, well, these ones are from Blue Goose Cattle Ranch in northern B.C., grass-fed, grass-finished, no hormones, no antibiotics. And these ones...
We have no idea.
We don't know anything about.
Right.
Which is not to say that they are necessarily bad, but we know nothing about them.
Right.
And when most of the time people wouldn't think about it at all, but when you put them right next to each other, everyone picks the one that you know something about.
Of course, yeah. And if it's not evident after being told. It's certainly evident by the taste. I'm sure that plate that had the ones up from BC were finished before the others.
Certainly. But so while it's true that we definitely think about it more in terms of food, right? I mean, it's, farmers markets are almost too busy these days. The crowds are too big for a lot of the original shoppers at farmers markets, and they're trying to figure out new ways to be able to buy food from those farmers. But so often when you go to the farmers market and fill your bag and you're on your way home and you stop at the wine shop to try and decide what you're going to pair with your dinner, you walk into the wine shop and it's like you've gone through a black hole. Mm-hmm. Because you don't think about ingredients and process and agriculture anymore as soon as you've entered the wine shop.
Yeah.
That now you're just looking for a bottle of wine to go with your food.
Yeah.
In spite of all the care that you've just taken to get your food.
So your company, Farmstead, it's very unique. I mean, I don't know, maybe you've done research in terms of any other people who are doing this, but it seems very unique to me. You have wines from Alsace, from France, from Italy, and you go and source those directly?
Yeah, don't buy wine from anyone that I don't know personally.
Uh-huh.
And then we have an accreditation process which covers the vineyard and the cellar so that we understand absolutely everything that's in every single bottle of wine. And that process, I think that our selection criteria and the way that we combine them are unique, but the idea of a concerted individual as part of a company sourcing wine in a very particular fashion is not something new.
Right.
That's something that Kermit Lynch has done for 30 years.
But in terms of the way that you get them around, in terms of the they're only available through your website, is my understanding. Through you directly.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. If you have distributors listening in New York, we are trying to expand that a little bit.
Okay.
But in the long run, some of the wines from the farms that we work with really will only be available through that wine TSA program that we've started.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that.
Well, so it works
because we hear of food CSAs, but I haven't heard of wine CSAs. I thought it was just brilliant.
And so the idea is just like regular community-supported agriculture, where typically you invest ahead of time and then you get the benefits of the growing season and you are returned produce or eggs or whatever that particular farm produces. And I think that's a perfect model for what we do, since we work with farmers who are trying to make a delicious agricultural product. Except the one thing that we've changed is that instead of just being a single farm where you're also accepting some of the risk as the CSA subscriber, so if there's a crop failure with the farm that you subscribe to, you just don't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried to eliminate that by when you're a Farmstead Wine CSA subscriber, you're subscribing to the range of farms that we work with. So that if there's a hailstorm in Austria, you'll still get the best wines of the vintage, but from Italy and France, say.
Yeah. Okay.
But it functions just like a regular food CSA, where you pay in advance, and then you're entitled to a certain share of the harvest, and that really enables us to offer better prices on wines that are rare in the first place, because we don't have to worry about the warehousing and storage and the sales costs necessarily associated with them. And the farmers are also happy because they get paid up front.
Uh-huh.
And some of their costs of harvesting and things like that are covered.
Now, one of the criteria that you have
win-win-win.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the criteria that you have for selecting these producers is that, or at least the wines from these producers, is that they're producing overall 1,000 cases or less per vintage. which is very limited amount. So it's definitely great to be able to then give, you know, CSA subscribers in the U.S. availability to those wines.
Yeah, and the wines that actually end up in the CSA are usually the even smaller than that. Any of the wines where somebody makes 1,000 cases, those are the things that we like to try and sell to restaurants or in places like that. But the stuff that's even smaller are the things that we really focus trying to get into the CSA.
So restaurants, then, you do have a license to sell to them in certain states or in all states?
In certain states.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then tell me a little bit about the terminology that's linked to the CSA program with the word vinaroon.
Well, in every language, or at least in countries where there's a tradition of wine growing, there's a word which inseparably means farmer and winemaker. So mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with the French, it's vigneron. Mm-hmm. In Italian, it's vinaiolo. Germans use Weinbauer. And there used to be a word in English which inseparably means farmer and winemaker, and it just existed around the time of Shakespeare, but then disappeared because it appears that we really didn't have a use for it. And I think that the history of winemaking in English-speaking countries will suggest that that has been true. So that word that we used to have was just an anglicized version of vigneron, and it was vinaroon. And it means inseparably farmer and winemaker, as opposed to splitting those roles.
Right.
So that it's more traditional in the New World to say that someone is either a
farmer
grape
or
grower,
a
grape grower yeah. or a winemaker.
Mm-hmm,
But there's not a word anymore that it's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great. Do you find that more people are using that, or is that something kind of unique to, you know, your company and your philosophy?
I've been trying to get more people to use it.
Yeah.
I haven't found that other people are using it. Frankly, my business partner was just making fun of me last week. He's like, we need to get rid of this vinaroon word. It's a good idea, but, you know, it's too cutesy.
But I think it has roots, you know, it has, it's been around for a while. It's just a rebirth of it, a renaissance, if you will.
Yeah, I'm with you, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, I would love to speak a little bit more about the other projects you have underway too, but we're going to take a short break, so please stay on the line.
Okay, thanks.
Everybody's here with me. Got no camera to see. Don't think I'm all in this world. The camera won't let me roam.
You are listening to At the Root of It, and this is Aaron Fitzpatrick broadcasting on the Heritage Radio Network. My guest today is Anthony Niccolo from Farmstead Wines and from the Food Tree Project, which I'd love for you to break into, speak about right now.
Yeah, it's perfect to talk about it right after Farmstead Wines, because Food Tree exists because of Farmstead Wines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was telling you about the accreditation process and how we know all the farmers personally, and so we really have all of this additional information about every single bottle of wine. You know, when it was pruned, what were the pruning methods,
mm-hmm.
when it was harvested, what were the processes in the cellar, what are the total sulfites per bottle, just lots and lots of information that doesn't really fit on a label.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, this farm is certified biodynamic, but what do they actually do? Well, you know, in this particular bottle of wine, they sprayed tea tree oil because they were having a particular issue in the vineyard. And this other bottle of wine, they didn't use any tea tree oil, but they sprayed chamomile in the vineyards because the vines were feeling a bit stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got all this other information outside of the traditional certification programs, and we need a way to communicate that. And not only to communicate that data, but to really connect people with the farmers themselves. And I'm sure you've seen it at farmsteadwines.com. We've got video interviews with all of the farmers,
yeah,
and lists of where you can find the wines and restaurants and retailers, particularly in Canada, because we just started selling in the U.S. But all of those lists, and then tried to integrate some social media stuff too, Twitter and Facebook and those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, frankly, to do it really effectively, it's an entirely separate project. It's a big project,
yeah,
to try and make it all live and work really well together, so that you can really discover the source of a bottle of wine that you're drinking from Farmstead Wines. And instead of just building a platform that works for Farmstead Wines or only works for wine, we've started Food Tree, and that is a platform that will work for any foodstuff or agricultural product,
mm-hmm,
to enable you to discover the source.
So you call it a food web, in a way, yeah?
Essentially, that there's lots and lots of information out there behind, you know, for example, behind the hamburger that you're eating, that,
mm-hmm,
it came from a place and was made in a certain way, and there's processes attached to that, and some of them might be really meaningful to you, depending on what you care about as an eater, whether it's distance traveled or the amount of carbon or animal welfare, whatever the issues are that are important to you. There's a lot of information that needs to be displayed. And all that information is out there, but there are lots of food producers and distributors who don't have an effective way to communicate that information.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we're building Food Tree to enable that telling of the story behind a product.
I could see that scaling pretty massively in time.
Well, yeah. Right now it's not normal to know where your food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely everything. And we can talk about that a little bit, but I've learned that really personally this year, that, you know, because my family were only eating and drinking things that we know the source of 100% of the ingredients, that it's beyond, you know, the distance that it's traveled. But it makes you a pariah to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't go to a restaurant. You can't just go over to a friend's house for a bite to eat. You suddenly become the person with the weird diet.
Right,
and
the weird
and the weird part is that you'll happily eat absolutely anything as long as you know the source of it.
Do you find that when you're over in Europe and you're with your winemakers over there, and I don't know if you're planning on going back in 2010, because you are doing this eating provenance, if you will, in 2010 with your family, when you go over there, do you have to worry about it as much as you might in the U.S.? Or you find that you're more at ease knowing that if you're staying in the countryside, you know, there's a large percentage of a time that food or that product is coming from your neighbor?
Yeah, I would say that the percentage there is greater, but I mean, there's a certain amount of industrialization of the food system, even in Europe.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Where it's hard to know those things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's frankly not normal to know where your food comes from these days.
Yeah.
But when presented in contrast, that, you know, I know where this hamburger came from and I don't know where this one came from, I think that people are much more likely to choose the one that they know something about.
So how are you documenting this journey?
So in that way, it certainly will scale.
Yeah.
How
are you documenting the journey?
Mostly just blogging about it.
Okay.
At foodtree.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then also have been trying to write lots of recipes and track everything. And hopefully we'll release some more more writing and just some more information about it. It's sort of the part that will be really useful to people, I think, is the how do you look for a good ingredient and how do you actually find things that you care about, right? So whether, you know, if you're going to the market and in your normal life you are really concerned about animal welfare, but when you go to the market, you don't worry about it too much, or you try to, but there's not that much information out there. And so the exciting thing, I think, is the way that the personal project and Food Tree work together, in that you're able to see the stuff that matters to you as an eater.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're still in early stages, but the idea is that at some point you'll be able to, you know, set up your profile and say, I care about animal welfare and carbon footprint, and I'm not that worried about labor practices. I think that, you know, the world is paying decent wages, and there's been enough people looking at that. Say that's your personal stance.
Right.
Then it's show me food that I want to eat. Show me my food tree. Show me the places where restaurants are working with foods like that, and show me places where I can buy foods that match my personal values.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the idea of the food web.
So the model really tailors it to the individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're developing software for that.
We're developing software for that, both web-based and mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And the underlying value is to make the food system transparent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That if it's true that, you know, it's only individuals that are responsible for our food decisions, then we need tools for that to work. We need to be empowered to make those decisions, and we can only do that if the data is available.
Right,
which is why transparency is so important.
Well, I think that word is so important too, empowerment, because there is, I feel, a lot of times a loss that people feel knowing that the government plays such a large role in monopolizing our food system. So it almost seems like you're up against a huge obstacle to, you know, combat.
Well, when you turn on the news and you'll see, you know, in the next month, you're likely to see some type of food safety scare,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether it's in your peanut butter, your tomatoes, your beef, your spinach, who knows where it's coming next. And all of those things are said to be safe because the government has said they are safe. And I'd much rather rely on the sort of old-fashioned handshake test. This is the person responsible for producing it. I can see them. I can talk to them. I can shake their hand and ask them questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's hard to do these days, to actually be in front of the people who produce your food. But that's the idea of Food Tree, is that technology can make that a lot easier, because the cost of interaction is so low that if there's a simple platform where you could send a message to the farmer or ask questions or see what your neighbors, even if those neighbors are online, have to say about that particular farm and the stuff that they produce, that you can get a lot of the value of the handshake test.
Yeah.
That you can't get from the government saying, this is good for you.
Well, this is some really exciting stuff that you're working on. Really great. I also, before we close, wanted to just mention that word provenance, because it is a terminology that we use quite often in wine as well. Most often for, I'd have to say, in the market that I'm in, with respect to auction wines or, you know, rare and vintage wines, and knowing their provenance and how much that, you know, relates to a greater picture of what you're speaking about here.
Right, which is really the term borrowed from the art world, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that this, when you're talking about rare and vintage wines, we want to make sure that this hasn't been, that it's been in good conditions, been stored properly, It hasn't been stolen,
mm-hmm.
And that there are no war crimes associated with it. Those are the art criteria, right?
Yeah.
And that it's not a forgery, and a lot of the similarities there exist in wine, but in food, all of the same analogies apply.
Right.
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 Is it actually from this farm, or has it been bought and repackaged? Or is this farm really a farm, or is it just a brand name? Plus, just knowing the source and understanding that something is authentic.
Right.
So, provenance is really just about understanding the source and the story behind anything.
Goes back to that handshake as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you define that in Vancouver, there is a good support, but there is, the farmers, the people that are in your agricultural landscape, really are able to supply you with the needs for your community.
You know, I find that there is a strong community here in Vancouver, but there was a strong community in Chicago, and I know there's one in New York as
right,
well around
right.
the Green City markets, and I actually find that it's more. It's less about geographic location
mm-hmm.
and more about there's a group of concerted businesses, that there are producers and distributors who actually care about provenance and the backstory and care about their process and really do actually want to be sustainable. It's not just, not just for marketing purposes.
Right.
And they need a way to tell that story. Patrick Martins and the work that he's doing with meat distribution. And he knows the source of every single piece of meat that he sells to someone and the backstory and how it was produced. And trying to find a way to make sure that that story gets to the person who finally eats it. Is really important, I think.
Definitely. Our producer, Jack, and the team, Patrick, and the guys here from Roberta's just went down to Virginia this past weekend and built a barn for about 2,000 turkeys down there. So it's like you said, it's
cool.
Right, yeah, it's right there.
The crop mob.
Yeah. And it was a cattle farm, too, so only eating the meat from that cattle farm and... coming back with some great stories and really being able to support, as you are, those people who are concerted in their efforts. So thank you. I know that you've also set up something special for Heritage listeners on your website, farmsteadwines.com.
So yep, so at buy.farmsteadwines.com, you enter the code HERITAGE at checkout. We're offering 50% off to our Heritage listeners on all in-stock Farmstead wines.
That's fantastic. So we have quite a readership and listenership, so we'll certainly get that word out and check out some of your wines. And please keep us posted on the development of Food Treaks. This is really exciting.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to talk to you about it more. I know that there are lots of listeners of Heritage Radio who really care about food and the food system in general. And so right around March 12th,
uh-huh.
We should have our basic release of stuff for you to do as an eater, so that mm-hmm. you'll be able to add images of food and tag it from a particular farm, so if you were working on a recipe, you could list all of your ingredients there and provide some standard information about them, and then get your own food tree map. So I think some cool stuff for some listeners to do, and I'll keep you posted about that.
But definitely, next
be
time in
March 12th.
Okay, great. And next time you're in New York, you'll have to come out to the studio as well. We'll do it. We'll do another show.
We'll do. We need to drink some wine together, too.
Yeah, you got it. Oh, well, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Erin.
Okay, and talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Won't be in the studio next week. We'll be in Miami, D.C., and San Francisco for Kaor Malbec tour, but hopefully we'll provide some footage of that from the road. Thanks for listening today, and thanks to our engineer and producer, Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener, and to our sponsor, Edwards in Surrey, Virginia. Thanks for listening.
Pero aquel antifaz que por fortuna no fuera un antifaz de terciopelo.